Welcome to this podcast of sermons from University Christian Church, Disciples of Christ in Fort Worth, Texas. UCC is a community of faith where all are welcome, where we worship in a spirit of togetherness, where we embrace curiosity, community, and compassion. We don't claim to have all the answers, nor do we expect you to check your brain at the door, but rather we gather together to find the courage to engage the scriptures and to ask the big questions about who we are as people of faith, and who God is calling us to be. At UCC, we seek the sacred, commit to love, and empower to serve. And in so doing, we work together to transform the world through Christ's courageous love. My name is Reverend Dr. Russ Peterman, and I'm the senior minister here at UCC, and so most of these sermons are from me.
So you all know, is this working? I'll talk loud. So you all know about Black Friday, right? Black Friday is the day after Thanksgiving. Everybody goes shopping, gets up early. There we go. Now, you may know that the day after Black Friday, anybody know what that day is? Small Business Saturday. That's exactly right, where they encourage everyone to shop at small businesses to support the local economy. Now, that's Black Friday. We've also got Small Business Saturday. The day after Sunday of that week is known as, anybody know? Cyber Monday. Everybody goes, does their Christmas shopping online. They're supposed to be working, I've been told, but everybody goes shopping online. Production apparently goes way down, except at Amazon, where it goes way up. They get super busy. So apparently every single day of the week now has one of these days where it's labeled as a certain day. I learned a new one this week. Apparently last Sunday, a week ago today, was Dating Sunday. I'm not making this up. You can find it online. There's a story that I read there. The first Sunday of the year is historically a big day for dating apps and online dating sites. These matchmaking services typically see their numbers go way up on the first Sunday of the new year. Bumble, for example, typically sees a 30% increase in new users on that day. Match.com expected this last year an 80% increase in the number of users, which was up over 69% of what they saw last year in 2019. When they saw a huge jump on Dating Sunday. A representative in the article that I read there, a representative from Bumble says, it's a mix of New Year's resolutions, post-holiday breakups, and the realization that Valentine's Day is just around the corner. And at the new year, it offers a new opportunity just to start fresh. Now, you have to be careful on these sites, I've been told. And by the way, I didn't learn this because I'm on one of those sites. Lisa, Kelly, I just want you to know that that's not where I heard this. We do have to be careful on these sites, though, by the way. I remember hearing about an ad that appeared in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution several years ago. It read this, single black female seeks male companionship. Ethnicity is not important. The story goes on to say, I'm a very good-looking girl who loves to play. I love long walks in the woods, riding in your pickup truck. I love hunting, camping, and fishing trip. I love cozy nights lying by the fire. Candlelight dinners will have me eating out of your hand. And when you get home from work, I'll be by the front door wearing only what nature gave me. Call 404-555-1212 and ask for Daisy. That day, 1,500 men found themselves talking to the Atlanta Humane Society about a black Labrador retriever named Daisy. We still don't know if she ever found a good home, but something tells me that she did. Now, this online dating, these apps, they've come a long way from the way we used to do it. I know I sound like an old man when I say that, but do you remember the old George Strait song? Emmylou got caught passing me a note. Before the teacher took it, I read what she wrote. Do you love me? Do you want to be my friend? He said. If you want to, I think this is how love goes. Check yes or no. Whether we're talking about online dating or passing notes, all of this points us towards the truth that we are desperate for relationships. It makes sense. We're wired as human beings to be in relationship with one another. We're made for a relationship, especially those relationships that bring us to the fullness of life. But we're also keenly aware, aren't we, about the fear of rejection. And by the way, I'm not just talking about romantic relationships, but friends, family, school, social circles. We're wired for relationships, but also keenly aware of the fear of rejection. And I think part of that is because a lot of us, our sense of identity is closely connected, wrapped up in our relationship status, or maybe how we see ourselves, how we think other people see us. If I'm honest, I have to admit that I struggle with that from time to time. That my sense of value, my sense of worth, my sense of identity is often caught up in what other people think of me, how other people see me. But what if, church, what if our identity, our value, our worthiness came from someplace else? Every year, the church stops by the River Jordan to overhear God whispering to God's baptized son, "You are my beloved child, and I am deeply proud of you." You see, I think that Jesus' baptism tells us how God feels about you and I just as much as how God feels about Jesus. Let me say that again. I think Jesus' baptism tells us as much about how God feels about you and me as it does about how God feels about Jesus. You see, I would argue that if baptism is about anything, it's about knowing who we are so that we don't waste life's precious time frantically searching for an identity that someone or something else can give us, but instead we can spend our life living out our God-given identity. Isn't that at least partly why we come here every Sunday morning? In hopes of hearing that affirmation, of hearing that promise that we are God's beloved children, that God is pleased and proud of who we are and who we're becoming. But yet, I wonder if even still we have some sort of a wrong impression about what baptism is all about what it means. You see, I think if we're honest, there are some Christians who think that baptism is some sort of a magical force, like a force field, something that will protect us from all the evil things that happen in life. It didn't exactly happen out that way for Jesus, did it? He was baptized, and then later he was tempted and tortured. He was betrayed and eventually executed. And so, if nothing else, his baptism should remind us that it's not some sort of holy religious shield that deflects tragedies from coming our way. It doesn't free us from hunger or abuse, from rejection or loneliness or even disease. It doesn't protect us from gossip or random violence. It doesn't ensure us that we're going to live happily ever after in a world of peace and light. In fact, I would argue that, if anything, baptism makes the opposite claim. The prophet Isaiah once said, "When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And through the rivers, they won't overwhelm you. And when you walk through the fire, you won't be burned. And the flame shall not consume you, because you are precious in my sight." Notice, church, that Isaiah doesn't say if, but when. That when you pass through the waters and the rivers, the fires, the flames of life, that even then, God promises, even then you are precious in my sight, and I love you. You see, that's the promise that Jesus hears at his baptism, that through Jesus, that we hear at every baptism. The promise that God not only knows us by name, but assures us that we are loved as we are, not as we think we should be, regardless of the circumstances that we find ourselves in. You see, when we read this story, it's not just an interesting history lesson about Jesus' baptism. We read this story to remember who we are and who we are called to be through our baptism. I think another misunderstanding about baptism is that we think it's going to somehow change us, that we're going to be different people as a result of having passed through the waters. Lars was an older, single gentleman who was born and raised as a Lutheran. And every Friday night, his favorite thing to do at the end of a long work week was to grill a nice big steak and to open a nice bottle of wine. And so every Friday night at the end of the work week, he would do just that. Now, the problem with this scenario is that all of Lars' neighbors were Catholic, and they were forbidden from eating meat on Fridays. And so this delicious aroma from these grilled steak was causing such a problem for all of his neighbors that they eventually called their priest and asked him to do something about it. And so the priest went to visit Lars, and he suggested that maybe Lars should convert to Catholicism. Lars thought about it, he prayed about it, he wasn't a part of the Lutheran church anymore, and so he attended some classes and eventually went to Mass, and as the priest sprinkled holy water over Lars, he said, "Now you were born a Lutheran, you were raised a Lutheran, but now you are Catholic." And the conversion was complete, or at least everyone thought, the following Friday night. Lars was there in his backyard grilling a big, beautiful steak. And as the aroma filled the neighborhood, all of his neighbors called the priest once again to tell on Lars. And pretty soon, almost immediately, as the priest rushed to Lars' backyard with a rosary in his hand, ready to scold him, he saw Lars standing over his grill with a bottle of water, and he said, "You were born a cow, you were raised a cow, but now you are a fish." That was a long way to go, and you all hung with me on that, and I am proud of you. We think baptism is going to change us. Thomas Merton is a Trappist monk, a prolific writer. He wrote over 50 books. But before he became a priest, he lived a fairly normal life. He went to college. He partied with some friends. In fact, many of his friends were surprised when he decided to enter the seminary. Years later, he reconnected with an old friend, an old drinking buddy from his college days. And they used to laugh and they joke, but they hadn't seen each other in 10 years. And when they got back together, his friend, he admitted later, was a little nervous. He wasn't sure what to expect. And after a slow start, they started laughing and joking, having as much fun as they used to, enjoying the old days, telling stories. And finally, the friend just sort of says, "You know, I have to be honest with you, I'm sort of surprised. I'm pleasantly surprised, though, to see the same old Tom." And Merton said to him, he said, "Listen, becoming a Christian doesn't change us. It just makes us more of the person that God created us to be. Becoming a Christian doesn't change us. It just makes us more of the person that God created us to be." You see, church, the truth is that those of us who are baptized, we're just like everybody else. We struggle to be decent human beings, especially in traffic. We are no more or less tempted than anybody else to be less than what God created us to be. We are sometimes filled with fear and doubt and worry. The only difference is that we do so within the knowledge that we are beloved by God, that we are claimed by God. And from our baptism onward, we live inside the promise that we have a strength, that we have a value, that we have a worth that doesn't come from others, but it comes from God. And that enough, that alone is enough. Fred Craddock, God rest his soul, used to tell a story about a young boy who was born in a small town, born to an unwed mother, and the whole town knew it. And in those days, that meant something. And it carried with it this weight of shame that fell not just on his mother, but also on him. And so when he used to go to town, he could see people staring at him, making guesses as to who his father was. And at school, the children used to say ugly things to him, and so as a result of that, he oftentimes stayed to himself during recess. He ate lunch alone. When he was in his early teens, he started to attend a little church back in the mountains. It was a small church, but there was something about that minister that he found compelling. He loved to listen to him preach. He was intrigued, and so he used to sneak in late after the start of the service, and he would slip out early for the benediction. He was afraid that he wouldn't be welcomed as he was, because he was, as they called him, a bastard child. And so he was constantly in fear of people asking, what's a boy like him doing in church? One Sunday, though, he got caught up in the final hymn, and the whole service was over before he knew it, and people were lined up in the aisle, and he couldn't get out. And he found himself starting to panic, and about that time he felt a hand on his shoulder, and as he turned around, it was that minister. And that minister was looking at him, and he began to tremble in fear, and he looked down at his shoes. But that minister raised his chin and looked him in the eyes, and he said in that moment, He knew that he was going to make guesses as to who his father was. And in that moment, a wide smile grew across the face of that minister. And he said, well, boy, you're a child of... And he paused. He said, you're a child of God. And I can see a striking resemblance in your eyes. Now go. You go into the world and you claim your inheritance. And that boy walked out a new person. It was the start of his new life. You see, every year the church stops by the banks of the River Jordan, where we remember our baptism, where we hear once again the promise that you are a child of God in whom God finds great joy. And so, sons and daughters of God, may you believe that you are beloved. And may you rejoice in that knowledge. And if you've not yet been baptized, come see me. Because it's time that you claimed your inheritance.
So thanks for listening. I do hope and pray that you found this sermon to be engaging and thoughtful and inspiring and maybe even a little challenging. I also hope that if you get the chance to join us on Sunday mornings in our sanctuary, you will. I think you'll find the welcome warm and inviting, the music inspiring, and there will always be a place at the table for you, regardless of who you are or where you come from or where you are on your spiritual journey. Just know that you're welcome here. And if you'd like to support the production of this podcast and the ongoing mission and ministry of UCC, or to simply find out more about this community of faith, we invite you to go to universitychristian.org. Grace and peace to you.